T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall, up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
We go ham.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
Everybody wants a pass rusher. Everybody wants a quarterback. And with Arizona, they're gonna probably take Kyler Murray, which is insane, just because they have a quarterback. Now, is this a better quarterback? Well, he fits the coach's system more. You actually hired a coach who can't work with the quarterback you just drafted? You know, when you really start picking it apart, they'll never get the value back for the pick they used on Josh Rosen.
Mully and Hall.
I think they're kind of kindred spirits in a sense.
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
That seems to be the popular theory that Ryan Pace is going to move up because he can't help himself. He's so bold and aggressive that this is the draft.
That's not bold and aggressive. Guy. Hold your water, son.
Yes.
Hold your water. That's what I might have.
Don't get too fancy, Mr. Pace, executive of the year. Don't try to prove it. You have the 87th overall pick. You're in the third round. Look, if you do it right in the NFL, if you do it right the way the Bears did last year, this is what you want the draft to be. Not the highlight of your offseason.
Mully and Hall.
It's a hell of a team.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Another wonderful day in Chicago. I think that it's going to be a little more cooler temperature-wise. Yesterday it hit 80.
Oh, it was a little hot.
Was that crazy?
Oh, a little. That's a little steamy. Yeah. Not really going to complain, but you know,
no.
Warm
just
too
gonna
soon.
Say, do not complain.
Not complain.
Far be
all
it
right,
from me to
right.
complain. I don't want it to snow on me.
Dodgers are in town. Hopefully it's mild, good California weather for the Dodgers.
Well, no. Let's create some havoc for the Dodgers.
Be a pleasant night at the ballpark.
May there be a cloud only over their heads. How about that?
Okay.
Let's get to the phone lines. 312-644-6767. Patrick has waited patiently. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Patrick.
Morning, guys. Just had a quick question after you guys talked to Big Z. Mm-hmm. He mentioned that the Bears might be interested in getting a tight end. It seems like a lot of reporters are suggesting that after the running back position, Bears might turn to the tight end. Is Trey Burton really that much of a bust after his first season with the Bears that we already need to go out and address that position? I know Shaheen hasn't been the greatest.
Yeah,
either,
I think Shaheen might be more of a bust
I don't
than
think it's
Trey Burton.
In relation to Trey Burton.
Right. And I think you experimented with Deion Sims. That didn't work. And you're short at that position. Ben Brodecker is a undrafted guy, is your third tight end, right?
Well, let's face it. You don't ever kind of get by in the NFL with one or even two tight ends.
Right.
It's a position where you need 2.5 to 3 quality guys. That's
a lot of attrition at that position.
That's you have to protect yourself. So in the middle rounds, if you have a deep position like tight ends appears to be in this draft, that's where you find your quality depth. You're not looking for a Trey Burton replacement in the third or fourth round. You need a supplement. You need a different type of player. If the Bears draft a tight end with the 87th overall pick, to me, it's not a reflection on Trey Burton. It might be a reflection on Adam Shaheen because you want him to compete with Adam Shaheen for maybe those snaps.
Let me be perfectly blunt because Patrick asked the question and I didn't bring it up. But if you ask me, do I trust Trey Burton? The answer is no. And the reason I don't trust Trey Burton is because, number one, he didn't want to run the Philly special. Remember that? They had to get someone else to run
that,
it.
But
because
I have a follow-up question, sir.
But let me finish the point.
I have a follow-up question.
I want to finish the point.
After you do
number
this.
Number one, he didn't run the Philly special. Number
correct.
Two,
correct.
The mystery disappearance the week of the playoff game when they had clearly built a game plan around him. That if you watch that game, you saw plays that were used and developed for the tight end.
Can't
and
argue
they
with
thought
you.
They thought they had an advantage at that position, and that kid was not available to them because his body tightened up or whatever the hell the reason was. And I got to tell you, David, whether you want to admit it or not, and no one in town would say it, and you can't question a guy. I worry about his psyche. I worry that that maybe he's a bit of a head case.
Okay, so I am
fair
sitting
enough.
Here next to you every day, and I am with you on that, and I will readily admit that I have the same concerns you do about his psyche, because he was in a position where he needed to be relied upon and you couldn't rely upon him. But if you are Ryan Pace or if you are Matt Nagy, you can't afford to be that guy. You can't afford to doubt him contractually or otherwise. You have a guy that you have to look at this, not necessarily what he didn't do for you against the Eagles, but what he did do for you in 16 regular season games. Okay, he was one of your best weapons offensively. He's a guy that caught, what he had 54 catches.
Okay.
He was a part of your offense, and that's what you have to focus on.
Right up till you needed him.
But when you're building the roster, or when you're filling holes, and the Bears don't have many, I don't know that you want to create a situation where you can't trust Trey Burton.
I don't think you're creating a situation where you can't trust him. I think you're acknowledging that the big moment might be too big for him at this point, and you better make sure you have cover in case something comes up again with him.
Woke up Saturday and my groin was completely locked.
Do you think, they're going to find that cover?
I've never had the groin lock, have you?
The groin lock.
I had a tough time walking.
I hate the groin lock.
Look, and I'm not. I know we're making light of it, but Patrick called up with that question, and let me tell you something.
It's a fair one.
I think you need cover at that position.
But are you going to find it in the middle of the draft?
Why not? There are plenty of guys that can play that you find in the middle of a draft. You find guys undrafted that can play. That, you know, they like Ben Brodeker. How do they find him?
You paid Trey Burton a lot of money to come here to be the answer.
I'm not saying cut him. I'm not saying get rid of him. I'm saying you better have somebody else that can play. When Trey Burton went down and you're running these shovel passes to
Adam Shaheen
and Ben Brodeker, sorry, man. You got to have a better player than that.
So you brought Brodeker back. You have Adam Shaheen back. You have Trey Burton, certainly.
I'm not sold on.
Well, I'm not sold on him either, but you have what you have.
If you're asking me right now to this point, he's been a bust.
Adam Shaheen,
up to this point.
Drafted where he was based on his production and availability, he has been a bust. Yep. I don't disagree with that. But I'm just saying, when I'm identifying things about my roster that I know and that I'm concerned about, if I'm Ryan Pace and I'm sitting there getting ready to draft 87th overall, I don't know where Trey Burton's psyche is on my list, but I don't know if it's in the top three.
Well, I think it's on my position list. I think the tight end, if I'm looking at the draft and I'm saying, how can I get better? How can I possibly get better with this roster? I'm saying I need more weapons on offense, and I always need more weapons. Listen, I'd like them to get an offensive lineman. I still don't think, I think Ted Larson signing him helps you, gives you cover, but I don't know that you have any depth.
At cornerback, at pass rusher, and you got to find a running back. Okay?
You always need a pass rusher. You always need one. Always. So I'd always try to get one. The problem is if you're not picking high and if you're not picking early, there's very few pass rushers. You can get specialty guys. That's what you're looking at by the third round. But, the third round can be a boom or bust round now. In the old days, it was always the third round was where you started taking some chances on boom or bust guys because you had – the first and second rounds, and then the second day pick was started with the third round. You could spend the overnight looking at it. Now that's the fourth round. So it's the first round followed by 2-3, and then they've spread it out over 3 days. So the time where you get to go back to your board and review everything is the start of the second round and the start of the fourth round. And it used to be the third round. You'll see a lot of really good third round picks because guys got to stop for a second, catch their breath, and check boxes.
Our doubts aside and the doubts of fans aside, do you believe that in that locker room, knowing NFL players as we've covered them over the years, do you feel like Trey Burton has a credibility issue within
his locker room? Yes, of course he does. When you're not there for your guys when it matters most, and you maybe you have a legitimate injury, but that was shady, man. And if I'm a player and I know coming out of that game, well, if we had him, we'd have gotten how many more yards and how many more points. The Bears didn't score in that game. They really struggled in that game offensively.
How do you go into the season then with a weapon that you can't trust?
Well, I think you just do it. And I think that
because you have to do it.
When we talked about it before, what's really interesting is that Cordero Patterson is a guy that can give you some speed deep. He's a guy that can give you a pretty good receiver. He can run the football.
He's a toy.
He can be.
He's a new toy
weapon.
For Matt Nagy.
His position is weapon, and maybe he can help out with some of that tight end stuff. Now all of a sudden, if you're going to give a shovel pass, maybe he's the guy who gets it Maybe he's the guy that comes off. Maybe he can line up everywhere. And maybe that has covered that position now. Maybe they already filled that position, is what I'm saying.
Do you think that Matt Nagy will have any more hesitation to go to Trey Burton in clutch moments than he did?
No. I don't think at all. But I do think that what it tells me is that that's something in the back of my mind. I'm not saying they have to get a tight end. I'm not suggesting that their first pick should be a tight end. If it was, it wouldn't bother me. I think everybody thinks they have to get a running back.
I think everybody needs to go into this draft, and this is what we're talking about. Don't be locked in any one position they have to have.
No, get the best player. It really is a best player available. Whoever is the best player, regardless of position, or if you want to say, then I'll tell you, definitely defensive end, right, if there's a pass rusher. Definitely, I'd throw in tight end. Definitely running back, okay? Definitely secondary.
What if one of these quarterbacks drops into the third round? What if one of these guys like Locke could go ahead of Haskins. What if the other kid, the Duke kid, drops? What if Will Greer is there in the third round?
Would you take Clayton Thorson?
I don't know about that.
In the fifth round?
You might be tempted, because if in the fifth round, that's going to be. He's probably got a third round draft. Draft grade.
I'm just saying. Yeah. I think the question is, would you not take a quarterback? I would take a quarterback.
Of course. If he's the highest guy on my board, there's no question about that.
You know, you owe it to yourself to take the best player.
Who are you not
have
taking him because
highest.
Of? Mitch?
Exactly.
No. Come on.
No.
You still haven't gotten to that point.
Oh, Taylor Bray. That's your third quarterback.
And you signed him. And Chase Daniel,
Is it Tyler Bray?
It's Tyler Bray. Yeah.
Sorry.
Tyler. That's all right. Trey Burton and Tyler Bray. What a connection.
You know, look, I'm not saying cut anybody. I'm just saying get yourself some cover.
I didn't say you were saying cut him. I just want to know how much faith is appropriate to place in him. And if you're the Bears, I don't know that you have any other choice. That's your best option, is to believe in this guy, that he can be the player that you need him to be, even though we let you down in the playoffs.
All right, we're going to shift gears. We're going to get to some Cubs talk. We'll bring in Len Casper next. We'll ask him how important is any series in April, and does he consider this some sort of measuring stick? It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Here it comes.
Len Casper.
Baez, deep to left. A grand slam into the bullpen.
Cubs TV play-by-play man.
Can you bunt the ball onto Waveland? That's my question.
Way out of here.
Kevin Hart is here.
I'm going to tell you, because I don't know if anybody else has ever told you, you have an amazing voice, man. Goodness.
Thank you. Like got to hear him sing.
It's like a dove. If a dove could talk, this is what it would sound like. Yeah, that's it.
Never been told that.
Twitter.com/LenCasper.
Oh, baby, Chris Bryant. Deep drive, way back. Ball game over. Cubs win.
Len Casper, talking Cubs with Mully and Haw.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Len Casper joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. Good morning, Len. How are you?
Morning, Len.
Hey, guys. Doing great. Enjoyed another off day yesterday, and we had great baseball weather on a non-baseball day, unfortunately.
It was beautiful. Obviously, the Dodgers come into town now, and I don't know. You know, it's very early in the season, and the Cubs struggled to open the year and then seem to have settled the ship and back to .500. And clearly, the pitching has been great over the last 11 games, whatever it might be. But I wonder, Len, do we look at that as sort of the opposition they played, one of the things that helped them get to this point? And is this a step up in class? And seeing what these guys did to Milwaukee, is this almost a litmus test, as crazy as that sounds this early in the year?
I agree with most of the premise of your question. I think it's probably early for any sort of litmus test. You know, whatever happens, it's generally just baseball. But I do think the Dodgers, you know, they're averaging about two homers per game. And, yeah, you know, the Cubs took advantage of the opposition, which you have to do. I think we've talked over the years about the unbalanced schedule. It's a little different this year because of the division looks to be very tough. And I think
for a lot of teams who are competing in the NL Central, they're going to have to really dominate the bad teams outside the division. So it's when you play the Marlins seven times, right, you need to win five, six, even seven games against a team like that. The bad teams you play in interleague play, you need to dominate. And that's how you win divisions, is you beat the teams you're supposed to beat. And then if you really go about 500 against the elite, you should be in pretty good shape. But it's always fun when the Cubs and Dodgers match up. They have been basically the cream of the crop in the National League the last 4 or 5 years. And I always look forward to these matchups for sure.
Len, on Sunday, Tyler Chatwood was as good as he ever has been in a Cub uniform. And I think his perseverance is to be respected and certainly applauded. This is a guy that quietly kind of rebuilt a lot of things about his inconsistency. And it was nice to see. The question is now, with John Lester coming back Thursday, will he make another start for the Cubs? Or what is his role moving forward? And what did Sunday do in that regard?
Well, if the question is, will he make another start this year, I think we can probably say yes, just because of injuries, attrition, schedule, all, you know, doubleheaders, all of that stuff. I think he definitely has earned that sixth starter spot at this point. But I wouldn't be a bit surprised if John Lester is back this week. You know, he's definitely, you know, saying all the right things, seems to feel good. I think Chatwood becomes a very key guy in the bullpen as well. He's a guy who can give you innings. And with Brandon Morrow's situation now much more unclear, Chatwood could potentially become a very intriguing asset in short stints. Carl Edwards Jr. is in the minor leagues. There's a role there for Chatwood to pick up some big outs, you know, not just as the long man, but, you know, kind of the right-handed version of Mike Montgomery the last couple of years, a guy who basically can pitch in any sort of role and get big outs when needed.
I thought Yu Darvish's last start was okay. I mean, I know they lost the game, but I thought it was okay. And again, I'm the only guy in town that has a glass half full with this kid. I get it. The stuff has never been the performance hasn't been as good as the stuff, but we're seeing him put together a few games where he goes five innings. That's not good enough for anybody, and people are calling up and ripping Joe. And I wonder, Len, and maybe you know or maybe you don't, is it Joe deciding he can only go five innings, or is there an edict from on high? Is there and maybe it's not even an edict. Maybe they're all in agreement. But here's a guy coming back from an injury. Everybody wants to kind of press the fast forward button and find out how the year's going to go. I don't know that I can blame Joe for taking him out, and I don't know that I don't want to see him leave him in. I think let's see what he can do.
Well, I think a couple of things. Number one, confidence is a big thing, and I think Joe wants to make sure that, you know, he feels good coming out of every start if possible. I think the National League part of it got him the line. He wanted to use a pinch hitter. And if that spot hadn't come up, he would have come out for the sixth inning. He has been competitive. And again, you can say it's not good enough, and we can go back to the contract and all that stuff. But it's been better generally every time out. I thought this last start, you know, the first inning matters, and he gave up the back-to-back home runs, and that pretty much was all she wrote, but he did settle down and pitched a lot better. He's using his two-seamer these last two starts, which has Chatwood-like movement, and I think is an intriguing pitch for him. I think he's been okay, and as long as he keeps you in games and gives you a chance to win, I think that's a good thing. And, you know, my hope, and I think everybody's, is that he'll give you more innings and at times hopefully be the dominant guy that we've seen just tiny glimpses of in his time as a Chicago Cub. But the bottom line is, guys, he's healthy. I think that's the one thing I told you when the season started, that it's a step-by-step process. Now maybe open the throttle a little bit and try to get 18 to 21 outs. I think that's the next step for him.
Len, I think people appreciate how you remain on an even keel, but when you look at the Brandon Morrow news, what was your first reaction, and how bad is it? Put it into proper context for fans that heard that news and thought, oh boy, indefinitely means you may never see Brandon Moore throw a pitch this year.
Well, it's not good, but I think based on his injury history, it's not altogether shocking. And I do think, you know, the Cubs went into this season understanding or at least bracing themselves for the idea that they may not have Brandon Morrow for much of the year, because you just never know, coming off even a minor procedure at his age. He's got the best stuff in the bullpen. He's your closer. He's the guy you'd love to have out there in the ninth inning every day. But if he's not there, you had to make sure that you had backup, and I think they felt like while they didn't go out and make major moves in the offseason, you know, they have Pedro Strop in their back pocket. Brad Brock has closed. Steve Cishek has done it. I think the biggest thing right now, David, is the fact that Carl Edwards is in the minor leagues, and I know he's on the injured list, but the fact that he got off to a slow start, coupled with the Morrow news, you know, that hurts. That hurts a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's where Tyler Chatwood, again, can maybe fit into this mix. I'm not saying he'll be the closer, but maybe he can get some big outs in the seventh or the eighth inning and can come in along with Brandon Kinstler and get that ground ball double play. I'm intrigued by the stuff of Chatwood, and the more he throws strikes, I think the more intriguing he becomes as a late inning option.
Len, we'll let you go. Just out of curiosity before we do, we've been talking about concerts and first concerts, and David went to Madonna with his first concert.
I did, and proudly, Len.
And
proudly.
Mitch is the winner. He went and saw he was nine, in fairness, but he went and saw the Village People with his mom. That's pretty good. Yeah, he's saying every time he hears it, now he jumps up.
Do you remember your first concert, Len?
Yeah, well, you've been to 1,000, I'm sure.
I do. I was 8, and my grandfather took me to see Johnny Cash.
Awesome.
That's in Mount Pleasant, fantastic. Michigan.
Yes.
And that's not only did we go to the show, but my grandfather, who never took no for an answer, got us backstage.
Oh.
And we met the man in black. And I remember this just enormous human with this long black coat. And he was very nice. You know, it was just a very quick hello. I don't remember what he said, but I remember just being in awe of how big and ominous he was. But that was my first concert back in the 70s.
That's a great memory.
That is awesome. You know, I thought he always said, "Hom," like, "Hi, I'm Hom Johnny Cash."
That's probably what he said, yes.
I hope you were wearing black, too, Len.
You know what? I was probably wearing something very, very ugly with mismatched colors.
Polyester. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Len.
It was that era. Thank you, Len.
Great
That's
stuff.
Awesome.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.
Yep.
That's
Johnny Cash.
Len Casper, the winner. I don't know.
I don't
Mike
know.
Esposito,
no.
Coolest guy in town. Hey, Mike.
Oh, yeah.
Hello,
I just
Johnny
remembered
Cash.
I saw Joy Division in 72. Yeah. In England before
that
they
been,
came
that,
over.
That would have been a tough one. They weren't around for that long, right?
Poor Ian Curtis.
Yeah, right. No, the Johnny Cash. Johnny Cash. I mean, New Order is cool and all, but Johnny Cash is tough to beat.
That's pretty. That is spectacular.
That's
it's a legend.
Legendary stuff. Yeah, it's very cool.
I think everybody saw kind of what I went through last year, how hard I was trying to get back to being me. And then obviously you can see the difference of what I did in the offseason, how hard I worked in the offseason. So I think everybody's happy to see that kind of come into fruition. So it was good.
Daddy.
Ed Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That, of course, is Tyler Chatwood.
Chatty.
Interesting idea proposed, or at least I don't want to say proposed, but certainly Len Casper advanced the notion that Tyler Chatwood can help the Cubs in the late innings of games out of the bullpen, as Mike Montgomery has from the left
right-handed
side.
Mike Montgomery.
That's exactly the term that he used, yeah. Which I raised my eyebrows, literally, and I was surprised a little bit because I do worry about Tyler Chatwood's control coming out of the bullpen.
Well, I mean, look, he'd have to come in a clean inning. I don't think, listen, there's recency bias, and then there's what we're talking about with Chatwood. But yesterday we had a question, should he replace Yu Darvish for a start in the rotation? That's insane. Why is that insane? Because
why is that more radical than the idea of having him as your potential closer?
Because you, if it's all about making sure you has a feel good and comes out of it, you can't skip his spot in the rotation because Chatty needs to start. You sit down. You're our fifth starter, is what you're telling him. I thought the whole idea was to keep his confidence up
right, and
to get him out in the fifth inning so he's feeling good about himself. And I do agree with what Len said. Situationally, they needed runs, and they couldn't have his bat after five innings the last time out. And he did allow three runs, but he got 12 of the last 14 he faced. I didn't think that it was his fault that they lost that game. I didn't think he was overwhelming or anything, but he came back and he was pitching his best at the end of the game, and I guess he does have a feel good.
But he exhaled after he gave up two home runs.
And Len didn't really answer that question, but let me ask you something. Do you believe that that Joe is the one calling all the shots with Yu Darvish, or is it groupthink? Is he doing it in consultation with management, or is there an edict being told, Joe, get him out after five?
You think he would like to go deeper in games with Darvish?
I think Darvish would probably like to go deeper in games.
I don't know that that matters.
I don't know that it matters either, but I think that Joe, the fact that they take him out after five innings every start makes me wonder if he's been told to take him out after five innings.
I understand why you would ask that question. I don't know that with Darvish, when it comes to him,
we spend a lot of time blaming Joe, is my point.
Yeah, I guess, but I think in that case you would not necessarily blame Joe as much as remember how fragile everything with Yu Darvish is and continues to be.
And if that's the case, if you're acknowledging that and it is drama all the time,
Okay,
how do you avoid drama by replacing him in the rotation for a start?
That would probably create more questions than it would answers.
Exactly.
It is tempting, though, based on what you saw from Tyler Chatwood, and you're not going to be able to see it again from Tyler Chatwood because, as Len pointed out, Lester's back on Thursday.
It was a one-off.
Okay.
I mean, I get it.
Spot start, quality.
You want to talk about recency bias. Hey, let's make him a closer. That would be recency bias. Does anybody remember he walked a guy to lead off two innings? Now, he coaxed a double play immediately both times, and that's great. But if you're putting him into a high leverage situation,
let's not overstate what Len was suggesting. I don't think he was suggesting making him the closer. I'm not overstating it.
He's talking about him in a high leverage situation like Mike Montgomery.
But if you're going to make him Mike Montgomery from the right side, you're going to have to be willing to bring him in innings which aren't clean innings.
I still don't think you can do that. Because he could walk someone,
right?
And I know he didn't walk a ton of people. His start was fantastic. Okay, it was great, but it doesn't mean I suddenly trust him.
Baby steps, but I think what Len is proposing is the best case scenario for Tyler Chatwood and his salary and his usefulness to this Cub team. Because otherwise, what is his role? His role is the mop up guy. You need more than a $38 million mop up man. You need to get more out of him, especially when you have a bullpen that's depleted and you're looking for a closer. And if you have a committee of closers or closer by committee, is he a member?
Can he
be a member?
But see, David, the minute that start ended, I was almost coming off the couch. I was like, trade him right now. Go ahead and trade him. I thought to myself, if he had another start like that, then maybe you could trade him. I didn't think, boy, you know, they got a lot of age on that staff and they're going to need a young guy moving forward and he's the right age. I don't trust him. And one outing isn't going to turn my mind on all that I saw last year. And Dustin, you're calling him chat walk and all this stuff. And now everybody is, hey, replace you with him. Hey, let's make him a reliever, a high leverage guy.
Isn't that as much a response to Darvish's last outing than Chatwood's? Well, you could trade him, and maybe that's the way that he helps the Cubs find a closer.
You can't
trade Darvish. No. You're right. But I think what people are responding to is the rest of Chicago wasn't as necessarily impressed by Darvish's last outing as you were. And I think that they saw the two home runs and they thought, like I did, like, okay, now he's going to exhale and probably be okay because he's not going to give up two more home runs.
You got to get aboard with the big plan, which is learn to love him. That's the big plan.
Learn to
love
him.
Find something to love you, Darvish.
Warts and all.
Because otherwise, what are you left with?
He's your fifth starter right now.
There's no one. Well, if that's what he is, then love him as a fifth starter because keep him in the role and make sure it's – you can't – get rid of him. You can't get rid of his contract.
You want to support a guy who has taken the steps that he has taken to be more of a teammate, be a better teammate this year, and to just you like to see a guy like that have some success. Now, I thought his last start, not great. Come on, let's be honest here. It wasn't great.
I didn't say it was great. I said find something to like about it because he's here long term. That's it.
Fair enough.
You can't trade him. You could trade Chatty maybe. I mean, I'm just saying.
The starting pitching has been so good, though, that with his ordinary, his mediocre stood out as being bad because the rest of the starters have been so efficient lately. That starting rotation, that's why I look at this series with the Dodgers, and I don't want to overreact to say, okay, they have to do this or they have to do that, because what they did in the last 2 weeks was reassure me that this starting rotation can be as good as advertised when it needs to be.
Let's squeeze in Dean to the conversation because he's waited so long and we've got some guests coming up. Dean, how are you?
Good morning, Dean. Thanks for waiting.
Apparently, Dean didn't wait.
Dean.
Oh, well.
How could you, Dean?
What was he going to say? What was his first concert? And you know what's great is I saw Adam in the hallway. Adam Staszynski's here filling in for Kevin, basically. Well, Ray's filling in for Kevin and he's filling in for – I don't know how it works. But I said to Studs, what was your – what was your first concert? His dad played music, so he went to tons of concerts. But the one that he remembers is Lone Star. And I was like, oh, my God, like I've seen Lone Star. I own a couple of Lone Star albums. Lone Star, Dan Pompey wrote the liner notes on a Lone Star album. So when we were in Jacksonville at the Super Bowl, we went to their concert, got backstage, met Richie McDonald, who is a super talented guy. They do a version of Walking in Memphis that was phenomenal.
I'm already there.
And they also what was the other song? Front Porch Looking In. It just hit me because my kids were young at the time.
Front Porch Looking In.
Great song.
Tugging at your heartstrings.
Tugging at my heartstrings.
Oh my gosh.
Too. And we got
You're
on the tour bus and everything. So isn't
I'm
that
already
funny?
There.
So he's that was his
Take
first
a look
concert.
Around.
And I actually saw them backstage. Let's get to Dean. Dean is in Island Lake. Hi, Dean.
Hi, Dean.
How are you guys?
Good.
We lost you for a second.
Yeah, my first concert that never was Sly and the Family Stone, 1970 in Grant Park.
Yeah, he never turned up, right? And there was a riot,
right.
Wasn't there?
Yeah, there's a riot.
I remember that.
Cars being turned over, set on
That's
fire.
That's right. It was a very famous thing. That's your first concert. The concert that didn't happen. That was also your first riot, I imagine, right, Dean?
It sure was.
All right, buddy. That's a good one.
Wow, that's a memory. 1970 was a riot when Sly and the Family Stone slated to play a free concert at Grant Park, July 27th, 1970.
Everybody went.
And nobody showed.
Yeah, well,
and everybody rioted.
Everybody went.
Yeah, okay.
No, Sly. But in fairness, that was kind of, that's the reputation, right?
Three people shot.
And it was free. So was free. You're bound to burn some stuff and shoot at people.
Of course.
You gotta find entertainment.
Exactly.
312-644-6767. We're gonna shift gears a little bit. We're gonna talk some NFL. We're gonna get into some draft talk with Dan Shanka. We'll bring in Mike Florio a little later. There's a lot
it's
going
draft
on.
Week.
It is very exciting. And even if the Bears don't have a first round pick,
doesn't matter.
Maybe they get one. Maybe they take 3 years from now as number one.
They
it's
won't,
Mully
but
and
it's still
Haw
exciting.
The score.
Yeah.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.